This podcast is brought to you by IFR Magazine. Hi, this is Jeff Van West of IFR Magazine. After listening to the ATC tapes from several of the Archie winners this year, I wondered what went on behind the scenes. Talking to the controllers, the theme that kept coming up was teamwork. While there was one controller working with the pilot, success depended on a network of people working together. Here's Kenny Ellis talking about his assist of a business jet.
Well, it was about 30 minutes before time for me to go home, and I had the hopper jet check on frequency with me at flight level 390 there, and he said that he had an emergency, needed an immediate descent. I had to formulate a plan real quick, and everybody was in his way at the time. I had some aircraft climbing underneath him that was kind of parallel to him there, and a couple other aircraft crossing with him. So the first order of business there was just to get them out of his way. So I turned him, which is it's kind of unusual to even turn somebody when they're in a situation like that. But at the time, I didn't have much choice, so I gave him the turn, and I started turning everybody out of his way because he was coming down at that point. People around me heard what was going on, and somebody sat down there to help me real quick. It was pretty much a joint effort, though. I had a lot of help with it. It wasn't just me.
Center Hawk, 752 Charlie Sierra, requests to descend immediately.
752 Charlie Sierra, say again.
752 Charlie Sierra, requests emergency descent.
Turn 40 degrees right.
40 degrees right, 2 Charlie Sierra.
Roger, descend and maintain flight level 370.
Descend and maintain 370, looking for over 370.
Northwest 647, turn right heading of 045.
Heading 045, Northwest 647.
2 Charlie Sierra, can you maintain 370?
2 Charlie Sierra, we need lower.
2 Charlie Sierra, traffic off your right about 10 miles northbound at flight level 360. 2 Charlie Sierra, traffic at 2 o'clock, 10 miles, turning to the right there at 360. Report that traffic in sight.
2 Charlie Sierra is looking. We need lower. We've got smoke in the cabin, and we got a baggage probably late. We need lower.
Roger. Maintain flight level 340, 3 Charlie Sierra, flight heading 180.
340, heading 180, 2 Charlie Sierra.
2 Charlie Sierra, descend and maintain flight level 240.
240, 2 Charlie Sierra.
But yeah, I issued the traffic to him because he was descending. The traffic that I issued at 29 was actually on the controller below me's frequency. He was talking to him at the time. But I had seen the traffic out there because I had him quick look feature. We can look down and see what he's got going on also.
You mentioned that someone else helped out or that several other people helped out. Can you tell me a little more about that? Who helped and how?
Sure. There was a couple of other controllers who were getting up to, were heading out on break at the time, and they heard what was going on, sat down on my D side and plugged in, started doing, making point outs to other traffic just to kind of free my time up to deal with this. And then the other controllers working in airspace below me, they knew what was going on. They're quick looking at me. They're looking at their traffic, trying to move their traffic out of the way too. So as soon as I knew he wanted lower, the first thing that I did was to send a data box to all the sectors beneath me. When all this is happening, it becomes kind of a group effort then. Everybody chips in to try to bring it to its best outcome, I should say.
Bob Zeman was working several aircraft from the tower at Midway when an emergency in the pattern had him relying on pilots all doing their part, as well as coordinating the ground response.
Yeah, what we had was the aircraft came inbound. We were doing a circling approach to 22 right and left at Midway. There was about eight other air carrier and commercial or in, corporate aircraft in the pattern at the time. And he came in, everything looked normal. And when he was about 4 or 5 feet off the ground, he said he had gotten a wind shear and he wanted to execute a go-around. And he executed his go-around. I put him in right traffic, right downwind for 22 left. He came back around again. He set up on final. He was following a Southwest 737. And as he set up on the final, I noticed he was just a little bit too high. At about a mile out, he was still at about 2,200 feet. And so I made a comment to him. I said, it looks like you're a little bit too high. Are you going to execute another go-around? And he said yes. And coming out of the crosswind to the downwind is when he came back and said, we're declaring an emergency. We lost all power. And so I watched the aircraft. Now, I had a couple of others on the final at the time, so I couldn't get back with him that instant. But my next maneuver was to clear every aircraft that I had in the pattern out of there because I knew I was going to have to clear him to land any runway. So I started to climb a Southwest that I had to get him out of the way. And then I came back to the Eclipse, and I told him he was clear to land any runway. Observed the aircraft coming down quite rapidly, in fact, this one here looked like it might not turn out well.
2 Kilo Bravo, you're clear to land runway 22 left. Just keep me advised. If you do happen to go around, just fly the runway heading, and the winds are 180 at 15.
I understand, 2 Kilo Bravo.
And Kilo Bravo, so you're going to execute the go-around, and what would you like to do, sir?
I'd like to make another run on the approach, sir.
You want to do just the VFR in the pattern, or you want to go out and do IFR?
Yeah, do it right here now. We got to make it come around. So we're declaring an emergency. 1-2 Kilo Bravo.
Okay, declaring an emergency?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Southwest over 1843. Well, I'm going to have to do for you, sir, is roll inbound on the final. Start a climb to 3,000 feet. Do it quickly for me. I've got an emergency coming inbound just off your nose.
Got to climb to 3,000 roll in on the final.
Kilo Bravo, understand emergency, you're clear to land any runway, 737 northeast of the field, starts a climb above your altitude, winds 180 at 15.
Yes, sir. All right, 484, holding Kilo Vinky, what's the follow-up ground down?
Air 484, roger, hold short of all runways for now.
What is 384?
South 1843, nice job on the altitude, just fly a 220 heading, I'm just going to have to send you around.
I think 220 now, so
your wind check 180 at 15. 2 Kilo Bravo, nice job, sir. And you need anybody out there to help you out?
Yes, sir, we do. 2 Kilo Bravo.
Okay, you just park it right there, sir. I've got emergency equipment coming out for you. You can just sit tight there.
You said he was at 2,200 feet. I assume you mean MSL. He wasn't
2,200
feet.
Yeah, 2,200 MSL.
But, okay, and so field elevation where
field
you are
midway? Field elevation is about 675, 687, depending, yeah.
You're working local, but now you're sending around a Southwest jet. How do you coordinate that with approach? I mean, midway, you're not talking about empty airspace there that he's climbing into. How do you deal with coordinating that off?
I climbed him up to one of the altitudes that I have available to me. I took Southwest up to 3,000 feet. The tape doesn't reflect because it turned off right away, but the tape doesn't reflect the other aircraft that were on the frequency at the time. Along with coordinating with Chicago approach at the time on landline, letting them know what I was doing. I was also coordinating with my ground controller as to where we need to set up emergency equipment should this aircraft land on a runway other than I expected him to land on. So we had to stop all taxiing aircraft. I told my ground controller at that time, stop all of your taxiing aircraft where they're at. Do not cross any runways. And then when the crash and rescue people started coming out on ground control, I also told my ground controller what routes to take out there to make sure that crash and rescue and airport vehicles didn't encroach in any runways where this pilot may want to put his airplane down.
Tom Gallagher got a distress call from a Bonanza pilot one dark and stormy night. Luckily for all involved, he had some expert experience to draw on, in the form of fellow controller Neil Irvin.
Initially, I was on the scope, Tom Gallagher, and I got the handoff from Oakland Center. And what got my attention immediately that this was something other than a normal emergency was the tension in the pilot's voice. When she came over and told me she was icing up, and then when she said she lost her airspeed indicator, and then I knew it was pretty serious, and I was afraid that she can stall out. The first thing that came to my mind was this pilot needed some expert help. One of the strengths I think of a controller is working as a team and knowing the strengths and weaknesses of the controllers and the personnel you have around you. I knew Neil was a very experienced IFR-rated pilot, instructor pilot, and I knew from talking to him from time to time that he's actually flown this type of aircraft, the Bonanza. And I believe Neil was plugged in as my coordinator along my side within a minute at the most.
Philly Cal approach, Bonanza 40 November Lima. I've lost my airspeed indicator, and I'm trying to get down because I've got ice.
Now 40 November Lima, North Cal approach, Roger. Descent and maintain 1-1000. Can you start descent now?
Yes, I've been coming down to 16,000. I'll go down to 1-1000. Thank you, November Lima.
40 November Lima, Roger. Sacmel Timbers 2974. I understand you lost your airspeed indicator.
Yes, I've lost my airspeed indicator, and I'm picking up quite a bit of ice.
Do you know what type ice are you receiving?
It's lime, and I can't see out my windshield.
Okay, November 40 November Lima, Roger. Descent and maintain 9,000.
Going down to 9,000. Thank you for your help, November Lima.
40 November Lima, Roger. Sacramento Timbers 2974.
2974. Thank you, November Lima.
Now 40 November Lima, make sure you got your pitot heat on.
I don't believe I have any pitot heat on this.
40 November Lima, NorCal.
40 November Lima.
Yeah, that metal bonanza, you should have pitot heat.
Roger, I agree with you. I'm just not finding it.
Okay. Do you have a flashlight?
I think I just found it. I just turned it on.
Okay. Yeah, you might also have other things. You might want to turn them all on and just check your alternator and make sure the draw is normal.
Yes, the draw is normal right now. Thank you.
Okay, then. Your windshield, can you see at the windshield okay?
No, I can't.
Okay, you might turn on your defrost if you feel comfortable looking for that. How many on board?
Just myself.
Okay, Roger. And if you have a flashlight, you might want to get it out and get it handy.
Roger that.
And 40 November Lima, you can keep a gradual descent going down to 7,000.
Down to 7,000. Thank you, November Lima.
And 40 November Lima, with the pitot heat on and that, are you getting, is it doing anything for your airspeed?
Not for my airspeed, but the heat in the cabin is clearing the ice off of the windshield.
Okay, that's excellent. And 40 November Lima, if you want to land at any other airport along the way, you have Georgetown. You're about 5 miles from Georgetown and about 8 miles from Auburn Airport.
Well, my wings have cleared off now, and I've got my lights on inside the cabin, and it's warm, and I can see, so I just assume continue on if it's all right.
Okay, tell you what. There is a line, Buchanan is IFR, there is a line coming through, and what you might do is there's an airport just to your right front there. It's McCollin Airport, about 5 miles ahead. Mather's just off to your left, about 9 miles. If you want to go in there and land and wait about 15, 20 minutes, at least till the stuff goes through, it may be better in the backside for Buchanan, and otherwise you're going to have to kind of go through it around Sacramento area. Your choice. You are below the icing level, though.
I'd like to go to Buchanan because my car is there.
Okay, well, I was just thinking you might want to sit it out till the weather just goes through the area.
Where else can I sit down?
Well, the best thing I would think is Mather off to your left side. You can go in there at Atlantic Aviation. They have fuel and actually a nice place for pilots to sit it out. And November 40, November Lima, they have the runway lights turned up quite a bit for you. The airport should be to your right front about still about 3 to 4 miles. You're showing 90 knots underground.
Roger, I see the runway. They do have the lights on.
Okay, 40 November Lima, you are cleared visual approach to runway 22 left, the left side. If you want the right side, we'll get you over to tower here shortly and you can request that. And you sure you have your airspeed indicator back all right? We're showing 80 knots. You are into a headwind.
Roger, I do have my airspeed indicator with me.
And Matthew, you got the visual on that 0 November Lima now?
Not yet. Still looking for her.
Okay, she's getting a little bit low. You want to let her know that she's getting low altitude.
Okay, we'll let her know.
Now, just to clarify here, she didn't know she had pitot heat, which is sort of astounding to me for an instrument pilot, unless she was initially VFR. Was she on an IFR flight plan, an IFR-rated pilot in a Bonanza?
It was a pretty severe weather night. I believe she was on an IFR flight plan from an airport in Idaho.
Boise, Idaho,
I believe, and to Concord, Buchanan Field in Concord, California. She was in solid IFR conditions at the time that we took the handoff from Oakland Center.
It sounded like you were watching her ground speed dropping. Were you on at that point, Neil?
Yeah, because my concern, I asked her a few questions to assess what was iced up, how much was iced up, and what she was seeing, and I knew it was going to get dark soon. The thing was to watch her speed and her altitude on the radar readout, and just to see that she's basically in control of the aircraft, you know, we're using that as a backup, more or less, to her systems, while we're trying to feed her ideas of solutions like turn on your pitot heat or any heating she has, whether we didn't know if she had hot wings or turn on her pitot heat. She says, I don't believe this model is equipped with that. That kind of put us in a situation where we knew we were going to have to kind of spoon feed her. You know, maybe she was just too nervous to remember that, because that's like day one when you start flying.
Now, you talk about feeding her ideas. It sounded like you were making some, not really recommendations, but offers for alternate airports than Buchanan. How do you handle that? How do you decide where the line is between making an offer that you really believe in your heart the pilot should follow and knowing that they're PIC, and if they want to go where their car is, they're going to go where their car is?
I think her concern was to be on a ramp in the dark, in the rain, was not going to be what she really planned. And my concern was to get her to make the decision to land at an airport so there wouldn't be any, you know, questionable doubt as to whether she could have made it or not. Some pilots, they'll just basically give it to you and say, what do you think I should do? And whatever you suggest, they go for it. She had this determination that she had to get to Buchanan, and my concern was her going through that weather was something that, you know, it was just something that we didn't want to face. We were going to do anything to get her just not to go in that weather, because I don't know how she would have come out the other side. No one else was even daring to go through. Even the air carriers weren't.
How critical do you think your piloting knowledge and the experience that both of you had were to a successful outcome here?
When I was a young controller, after the Vietnam War, there was the GI Bill that was going around, where you can get your flying, where you can get the government to pay for your flight instruction. There was a lot of pilots, a lot of controllers that I worked with in my younger years that were pilots because of the GI Bill, and that's since long gone. So, and with the economy, there's not a lot of controllers with flying experience. In our area alone, we had discussions that we used to have 15 or so controllers that had a huge amount of experience flying. And now, we're probably down to just a handful, and it's a huge asset that we have for controllers that are experienced and have the flying experience, such as Neil. I as a controller have learned so much from controllers that have a lot of flying experience. They've helped me in my job and things that I would have never learned.
We used to have FAM trips. We can get back in with the flight crews and learn what they're going through, and we can exchange on a professional level. How can we help you? How can you help us? We can back and forth, you know, understand rules. Some rules might be vague to one side or the other. All those things are gone now, so we pretty much just provide what we can to these newer people and just let them build their experience, but it's just not what it used to be.
This podcast has been brought to you by IFR Magazine. For more on IFR, log on to www.ifr-magazine.com.